Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 28, Verse number 9. Kaman Abhilashan Dino Yata Yamams Cha Kanyaya Vigatatma Gati Sneha Putra Dharam Cha Lalayan Kamana Bhilashan Dino Yatayamams Cha Kanyaya Vigatatma Gati Sneha Kaman Abhilashan Dino Yatayamams Cha Kanyaya Vigatatma Gati Sneha Putradarams Cha Lalayan Kaman Abhilashan Dino Yatayamams Cha Kanyaya Vigatatma Gati Sneha Putradarams Cha Lalayan Kaman
Objects of enjoyment
Abhilashan,
always lusting after.
Dinaha,
the poor man.
Yatayaman,
stay.
Cha,
also.
Kanyaya,
by the influence of Kala Kanya.
Vigata,
lost.
Atmagati,
real purpose of life.
Sneha,
attachment to
Putra,
sons,
Dharam,
wife,
Cha,
and
Lalayan,
affectionately maintaining.
Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada ki.
The objects of enjoyment become stale by the influence of Kala Kanya.
Due to the continuance of his lusty desires, King Puranjana became very poor in everything. Thus, he did not understand the aims of life. He was still very affectionate towards his wife and children, and he worried about maintaining them. This is exactly the position of the present civilization. Everyone is engaged in maintaining the body, home, and family. Consequently, everyone becomes confused at the end of life, not knowing what spiritual life and the goal of human life are. In a civilization of sense gratification, there cannot be spiritual life, because a person thinks only of this life, although the next life is a fact. No information is given about it.
Om Ajnana Timirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakhaya Chakshurunmilitam Yena Kasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadahmayam Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Guru Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatanvitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padat Sahagana Lalita Shri विशाखान्विताश्च हे कृष्णा करुणा सिंधो दीनबंधो जगतपते गोपेशा गोपिका कांता राधा कांता नमोस्तुते तप्त कांचन गौरांगी राधे वृंदावनेश्वरी ऋषभानो सुते देवी प्रणमामि हरि प्रिये वांछा कल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपा सिंधुभ्य पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभो नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधरा श्रीवासादि गौर भक्त वृंदा हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे कृष्णाय वासुदेवाय देवकी नंदनाय च नंद गोप कुमाराय गोविंदाय नमो नमः योऽन्तः प्रविश्य मम वाचम् इमां प्रसुप्तां संजीवयत्यखिल शक्तिधर स्वधाम्ना अन्यांश्च हस्तचरणश्रवणत्पगादिन् प्राणान् नमो भगवते पुरुषाय तुभ्यम्
Before I begin, I'd like to convey my thanks to Maharaj for permitting me to be on this Vyasasan because I don't deserve to be here in the first instance. I would like to thank Sukadev Prabhu for giving me this opportunity, and I would like to thank all the revered Vaishnavas and Vaishnavis assembled here, and my special thanks to my spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, and my special thanks to His Grace Jagannatham Prabhu, who is my Bhagavatam teacher. So with all your blessings, I will seek to speak something so that I can serve you and the Purana incarnation of the Lord. So when I start preparing for this lecture, I always wonder the chapter names of Srimad Bhagavatam. What is the chapter that we are studying now? What is the canto we are studying now? The fourth order. So I was actually wondering, it's just me, that what do you mean by fourth order? What is the creation of the fourth order? So when I started hearing some lectures, it pointed me to a verse in the second canto, the 10th chapter, which says, Shri Sukhavacha Atra Sargo Visargascha Sthanam Poshanam Utayah Manmantareshanu Katha Nirodho Mukti Ashrayah. Bhagavatam itself speaks about 10 subject matters. In fact, all Puranas need to speak about these 10 subject matters. And the 10 subject matters are Atma Visarga, Sarga Visarga is creation, secondary creation, Sthanam is planetary systems, Poshanam is cultivation, Utaya is maintenance, and things like that. Manmantara is the cycles of the Manus and the Katha of them. And Nirodho is destruction, Mukti and Ashraya, Shelter is Ashraya. Now what's interesting is, when I was hearing this lecture, Prabhupada had written just the first canto when he was in the Jalabhuta. And when the research was done, it was found that in the Jalabhuta diary, he has actually jotted down the blueprint of how his 12 Bhagavatam cantos will unravel. So he had named the cantos in the ship in his diary. That's where the names actually came out from. So he called the first canto as creation. You all know why? Creation. The first canto is called creation, isn't it? Am I right? Yes. Why is that? Because the first verse, Janmadyasya Yatonvayat Itaratascharthesva Abhignaswarat. So Janmadyasya Yatah, the beginning. Janmadi means creation. He's the primordial person, Krishna. So it is creation. So that's why he called it creation. And then the second canto, and then it goes on. So like that, in the third canto, which is called as Sarga, which is the primary creation, sage Maitreya, sage Vidura inquires from Maitreya,
Can you please explain to me about the manus in detail, please? I want to understand the lineage of the manus. So this is a question that who asks? Who is the person asking this? Vidura to Maitreya. So he's asking this question. And in response to this, Maitreya begins answering the question from the fourth canto. Because in the third canto, we have completed the primary creation. The primary creation is created by who? By Balaram, who is the Purusha avatar, who is the Karana Daksha Vishnu, the Garbha Daksha Vishnu, and Purusha avatars. Basically, the Purusha avatars. So they create the first creation. And then the second creation starts from Lord Brahma. Lord Brahma starts the second creation. And then from him comes the Manus, and then from the Manu we discuss. So the fourth canto is called the fourth creation of the fourth order, because after Brahma, Brahma's son Swayambhava Manu's two sons, who are they? Uttanapada and Priyavrata. And then the lineage of Uttanapada is primarily discussed in the fourth canto. So that is why it's the fourth order, creation of the fourth order. This was, I just wanted to be clear in my mind, so I just wanted to understand this a little bit better. And the fifth canto is Sthanam. Sthanam is how did the planetary systems, these gigantic masses of objects of earth, water and fire are being made. So that's what Sthanam is all about. So coming back to the fourth canto which we are studying now, one of the sons of Swayambhava Manu, Uttanapada, this canto is all about his lineage. And we studied a lot of great personalities in this canto, such as, anyone can name? Who did we study in this canto? Dhruva Maharaj, Prithu Maharaj, Anga, Vena. Yep. Although he's not a great personality, but we did have to hear that he's a very obnoxious personality. And where we are now studying is the lineage of Barhishar, King Barhishar, who is famously known as Prachina Barhi. Now this king is called, his name is Barhishar, but he was actually predominantly known as Prachina Barhi for a specific reason, because he had an addiction. His addiction was, wherever he went, he would start doing a sacrifice. He would just lay the kusa grass pointing towards the east, and he would start doing the sacrifice. And the sacrifice ranged from animal sacrifice, whatever pleases him, he will start doing it. It's the same person who actually advised his sons, Prachetas, to go and meditate so that they can populate the entire universe. The same person is engrossed in these ritualistic activities of the Vedas. And because the kusa grass that he used to lay is called Barhi, kusa grass is called Barhi, so he came to be known as Prachina Barhi. So although being pious himself, he did not know how to actually execute these scriptural injunctions, for he did not understand the main purpose behind these ritualistic ceremonies, which was why he was he obtained the mercy of Narada Muni, who actually comes to him and says, I need to wake the soul up because he's lost in these fruitive activities. And that is when Narada Muni comes to him and starts preaching to him about an allegorical story or a metaphoric story of King Puranjana. So King Puranjana's story, he starts. And then what's interesting is, Narada Muni is trying to wake Prachina Barhi from his deep slumber of executing these ritualistic activities and tell him that the ultimate aim of the Vedas is to know Krishna, is to become Krishna conscious. So just by merely executing the activities, though they are ritualistic activities mentioned and enjoined in the Vedas, if one does not know the purpose of these activities, the activities are useless. Just as there are a lot of birds which are taking bath in the Ganga and the Yamuna every day. There are a lot of reptiles, there are a lot of insects going into the Yamuna and coming out every day. But because they are not aware of the fact that it is Yamuna, it might not help them in that. And that is why it brings us back to the position that human form of life is so important, because we are aware of what we are doing. So any activity in itself is not important, but the reason and the knowledge behind the activity becomes very critical. In fact, and that is the reason Narada Muni had come to Prachina Barhi and was trying to instruct that do not get lost in the Brahmana sections of the Vedas. There are more critical sections in the Vedas like the Upanishads. Please be aware of them and try to get knowledge from them. Coming back to the story of King Puranjana, the name Puranjana indicates possessing different bodies. Pura means a body, Pura means a house. Purusha, as we say Purusha, we are all Purushas. Every one of us is a Purusha. Purusha means Pura Isha, iti Purusha. Pura means a body, Isha is the controller of the body. In fact, we are not the controllers, but general nomenclature, nominally we say we are Purushas. So Puranjana means one who enjoys possessing different bodies. And the mentality of enjoyment is in the material world is accommodated by different types of bodies. So a jiva, when he is moving between different, how many life forms we have? Eight million life forms. And the life and the jiva tries to aim to get a human form of life. Why is that? There are two reasons. One is, of course, there is an impetus to get into spiritual life. But the second reason is, human form of life is the only life which can enjoy all of the senses to the max. Animals or trees or any other species cannot enjoy their senses to the max because human life, because they are conditioned, they will not be aware even that they are enjoying because they are conditioned. But human form of life, they are aware that they are enjoying with their senses. So that is why a jiva waits to get a human form of life. So that is why Narada Muni names the king in the allegorical story as Puranjana, means that person who would like to take different bodies, but he also wants to have a human form of body so that he can enjoy his senses. And in the juncture where we are studying now, Kalakanya has taken over Puranjana. He has been attacked by the Yavana king. Yavana king here indicates Yamraj or a foreign body which is trying to attack the peace, the enjoyment that Puranjana is trying to enjoy. And at this point in time, any living being gets a fever, type of fever called as Prajwala. Now Puranjana has become invalid, which means the senses are giving up. So that is why Prabhupada writes, the objects of enjoyment become stale. And we have noticed this. Most of the times, if we like to eat a delicious preparation, and if someone's not well, if he's sick, the same delicious preparation which we love so much becomes very distasteful. Do you all agree? Yeah, because the object, the sense object is the same. We have the same senses, but the desire to enjoy the sense object is not there. So it becomes stale. And that's because the senses do not obey the mind to say, hey, you want to enjoy this? No, I don't want, because the senses give up. So Puranjana is at that stage. But the problem is, the senses are giving up, but he has not given up his lusty desires. The desires are there. Majority of the population today we see is what we see, that people have reached old age, but their desires are not finished. They have numerous desires to enjoy in this material world. They want to enjoy more with their senses, but the senses don't keep up. And there is a sort of a depression that old people go through, because the senses have lost the capacity to enjoy them. And his wife and sons have become indifferent at this stage. Now one thing I noticed is, it's amazing that Narada Muni is preaching to King Prachina Barhi. He does not preach to him directly. Is it not? He starts creating this allegorical story. And it's wonderful, because I was trying to understand that if you have to preach to someone whom you can't preach directly, this is a nice way of preaching. So Narada Muni is trying to preach him in an indirect way. Because of course he is a king, and king means he will have some, you know, ego. It's not easy to directly say, you rascal, stop doing this, like our spiritual masters tell us. So he was trying to preach to him in a roundabout way. So, and the history repeats, because Prachina Barhi was so fortunate that Narada Muni himself was willing to give him his audience and to preach him to wake up from his slumber of ritualistic activities. Are we all not so fortunate? We are, because Srila Prabhupada has left us his priceless treasures of his books, where we can also use this to be always awake. We're not so elevated as King Prachina Barhi to execute the Vedic ritualistic ceremonies and follow the Vedas to that extent. But and yet we are very fortunate, because we have the divine mercy of His grace, His divine grace, Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki. Srila Prabhupada's transcendental books ki. Then I spent some time understanding from the Bhagavatam how this body grows and how we go through the different stages of life. So let's discuss a little bit about that. At any point in time, if I don't make sense of something, please stop me. When I was studying the 7th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, Prahlad Maharaj says, Mukdasya balye kaishore kridato yati vimshatihi janayagrasta dehasya yatya kalpasya vimshatihi. Prahlad Maharaj is saying, in the tender age of childhood, when everyone is bewildered, one passes 10 years unknowingly. Similarly, the boyhood engaged in sporting and playing, one passes another 10 years. So in this way, we have crossed 20 years already. Wasted. Similarly, in the old age, when one is invalid, unable to perform even material activities, one passes another 20 years wastefully. So, I was just thinking, if you all observe, what is the best part of our life? What age is the best part of our life? If you all actually reflect back, some of you have reached that stage, so we have children here. What is the best part of our life?
16.
Youth. Growing up. Isn't it? Teenage. Is it not most of us agree it's teenage, it's being youthful? Why is that? Have you all wondered? Why is youth so attractive? Why is youth the best part of our lives?
No responsibility, no care. No responsibility.
No responsibility? Energy? Yes, very nice. Anyone else? Yes, ma'am.
You can enjoy the maximum in that
time. Correct. Thank you very much. Thank you very much, ma'am. I was actually wondering why everyone wants to become youth. You know, children are waiting to become 18 so that they can get their own driver's license. So they can be free, not dependent on their parents. What's interesting is, up until we reach the youth, before we reach the youth, we want to become youth. And after we cross the youth, we don't want to cross the youth. We want to stay there. Is it not? And the feeling is because Bhagavatam says, it is at this stage of life that the senses are fully developed. And it is this stage of life that the senses are fully subservient to the mind because they are ready to be enjoyed by the mind. And it is this stage of life that the mind can actually get what it wants from these senses so that it can suck up all the pleasure that it can from the sense objects. And that is why this prime period of life, that is youth, is very nice because you're all enjoying at the max because the senses are performing at top notch. The engine is nice. No overhauling is required. And many jivas, and it's appalling to say that there are two classes of jivas. One class of jiva is they come to this stage and they perform all sorts of unconstitutional activities in the form of enjoyment and they get bewildered after they pass through the stage of youth. And there are other form of youths who right in this time of youth, which is the time, prime time to enjoy the sense objects, they give it up. For me, a practical demonstration is the brahmacharis in Melbourne. Because if I see the brahmacharis in Melbourne, they are not normal jivas. And they are also not jivas who have nothing to do with this medical universe. They were in the prime of their youth, they were masters in their education. They were landed, they were in their plush jobs earning, you know, handsome salary. And right at that time, they renounced. So for me, like, you know, Manmohan Prabhu, I can't even fathom Dija Prabhu, Gopal Prabhu, Param Brahma Prabhu. I can't fathom how they can do this. So these are different type of jivas. That's why I call them sages of Albert Park. And Maharaj, when I was hearing Maharaj the other day about how enthusiastic he was about Harinam Sankirtan, and he was actually imprisoned because of that in the prison of London. So I can't fathom how someone in this prime age of youth can abandon sense gratification and take up to Krishna consciousness. But of course that means they are souls who are here in the Taratamya, who are in a very highly elevated soul, otherwise it's not possible that the senses are inviting and yet you abandon them. So a little bit of discussion about the senses. And now, if you talk about the facilities that is provided in the material world these days, it is predominantly consumeristic society, if you see.
We are not humans for grocery stores like big retailers. We are not humans. We are
consumers.
We are consumers, potential to be sold a product to. How can I sell a product to this jiva? That is what they would be thinking. So we are consumers. And the onslaught of this consumeristic culture is, I was reading recently, there was a mad rush in one of the global retailers here, and there were mums fighting for a product that was launched. And you know what was the product? It was reusable napkins. Or in other words, cowpens, basically. So they were actually fighting for that. There was fights, they were pushing each other to grab the deal of reusable napkins. So much so we are programmed in this consumeristic culture. A few weeks before, Anirudh Prabhu was sharing that there was an advertisement where car brakes, and there were Matajis being paraded nude to advertise this. And same, I was watching an advert in the television in the office where Matajis were paraded nude, and the advertisement was for a mechanic shop. Can you imagine? Of a mechanic shop. So much propaganda is going on to instill these obnoxious desires so that we can remain. This is Maya Devi at her work. She's best at this. And the agents are everywhere. The Maya agents are everywhere, and they will work. So you open your mouth, you open your eyes and watch something, you're gone. So it's so dangerous, this atmosphere of consumeristic civilization. So everyone is planning, and because the jiva does not know what is true, what is right and what is wrong, everyone is planning for future happiness. They're planning in such a way that they will think there is no other second life. Let's enjoy to the max in this life. Then I was thinking, how does a spiritualist see all this? How does a spiritualist perceive his senses, just as the brahmacharis or the sages of Albert thought? How do they see all this? In fact, it takes me to one of a very famous Madhukari or a saint from the Madhva Sampradaya. His name was Kanakadasa. He writes a kriti, a song, where he says, Saviyu sakkarayulago, sakkarayu saviyulago, Saviyu sakkarayaradu, jibheyulago, jibheyulago, jibhe manasina ulago, manasu jibheyulago, jibhe manasugalaradu, ninnulago, Krishna. So he is meditating that, oh my dear Lord Krishna, I do not understand your creation, because you say sugar is sweet. Is the sweetness in sugar? Or sugar is in sweetness? Or the sugar is in sweetness? Because sweet, Krishna says, rasoham apsukonte, that means he is the taste. Every fruit that we taste is because of Krishna being there, because he is there as the rasa. So he's saying, is sugar inside sweetness, or the sweetness inside sugar? Or, in fact, the sugar and sweetness are both inside the tongue that tastes. Is it not wonderful? And then he says, oh, maybe it's not the tongue, maybe it's the mind. So is the tongue, the sugar, the sweetness actually a concoction of the mind? Or maybe not. Maybe the mind, the sugar, the sweetness, actually they're all inside you, because you are tasting that sugar. Because the sugar, the objects, is bhinna prakriti ashtadha. It is my separated energy. So the sugar is you. The sweetness is you. The senses are you, because you are Rishikesha. The senses are you, because the tongue is yours. The mind is yours, because you are controller of the mind. So actually it is you who is sugar, it is you who is sweetness, it is you who is tasting. But I think I am tasting that sugar. I am thinking, because I'm running on borrowed plumes, I'm thinking I am tasting the sugar. I am enjoying the sweetness. I am controlling. Aham mamet. So this principle, the sages or the spiritualists meditate on this to say, actually it is Krishna. And Krishna, and in the nectar of devotion, it is confirmed, sarvopadhi vinirmuktam tat paratvena nirvanam hrishikesha hrishikena sevanam bhakti rochati. So it is Hrishikesha. The senses are actually controlled by Hrishikesha. That is why he is called as Hrishika Isha. Hrishika means senses, Isha means the controller. So he is actually controlling our senses. And then, and the same spiritualists also think that if you see what Prahlad Maharaj says, that the endeavors that we put in this material creation will only give us misery. Because why is that? What is Prahlad Maharaj's analogy? Analogy? Do you all know? What comes to us uninvited? Your miseries, isn't it? So Prahlad Maharaj says, you did not invite misery and you did not even endeavor to get that misery. And yet, misery came to you. So in the same way, happiness also will come to you. Why are you endeavoring? So this endeavor to work for happiness itself is a farce. So Prahlad Maharaj says, the whole idea of economic development itself is a farce. Because there is the human endeavors is only Shrama Eva Hi Kevalam. And this human form of life should be engaged in the supreme charanamrujam, Mukunda charanamrujam. We should engage this in the ultimate purpose, which is to realize Krishna's lotus feet. And Prahlad Maharaj and many other sages repeatedly confirm this message. And if you go back to the story, King Puranjana, Narada is preaching about King Puranjana to Prachina Bharati, is about the same to say, wake up, do not execute. These endeavors or ritualistic ceremonies will not take you anywhere. If you think that performing these ritualistic activities are going to take you somewhere or will give you some benefit, it is wrong. So you have to understand one thing. He is not asking to stop these ritualistic activities. He is advising to perform them with the ultimate purpose in mind. Because it is Vedas that has to be followed. And in the end, if we see what is the medicine or what is the solution for all of this, we have to understand, Krishna says, Daiviyesha gunamai mama maya duratyaya mameva ye prapattante maya metam karam. So the senses, this maya devi is so difficult to overcome that we cannot overcome it. We cannot overcome it because it is Krishna's energy. It is Krishna's energy. So how can I have the capacity to overcome this energy? Daiviyesha gunamai mama maya duratyaya. And the only solution is mameva ye prapadyante. Mameva ye. Krishna is saying mam. Only who surrender to me. Mameva ye prapadyante. Mayam etam karanti. Only he who surrenders to me can cross this nations in that sense. And then in the Chaitanya Charitamrita it is written, Tate Krishna bhaje kare guru rasevana maya jala chute. Krishna charana, Kaya Krishna charana. That to achieve the ultimate goal of life under the supreme instructions of your spiritual master, only this way is the only way to attain the Krishna's lotus feet. So is what's confirmed in all the scriptures and the shastras. So with this, I end my discussion and speech here. So I thank you all of you for being here. If there are any corrections, comments, any questions, there are you and Jiva Maharaj here, so please be free to ask them. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Yes, sir.
Hanuman Prabhu, you referred to lotus feet so many times in the world. So what is there in that lotus feet that you are so much in which you have taken? Just explain it.
Thank you, Mahatma Prabhu. Mahatma Prabhu has asked a question. Many places in the scriptures it is referred to as lotus feet. So can you please explain about why lotus feet has been mentioned in Tantra? Please reflect the question. Senior Vaishnava's permission, I'll take the courage to answer this. Usually, for jivas living in this creation, it is very difficult for the shastras to explain what is beyond this, what is beyond this creation. Because shastras is made of what? It is made of those 52 syllables, the letters, which is called akshara. That is why they are called as akshara. Kshara means fallen. Akshara means that which is not fallen. So that akshara purusha can be explained by these aksharas. So it's very difficult to explain that which is beyond our sense perception. But yet the scriptures attempt to do that. So that we can have a picture. For example, if someone's not tasted a mango or never seen a mango, so you have to explain to him in a way which he knows about or which he's experienced in some way. So in that sense, For people who are here, lotus feet, lotus is a reminiscent of a flower which is very soft, which is beautiful to look at, and which has numerous properties again, which is growing in a pool of water and yet it is detached from water. So there are so many properties that the lotus flower has, and that is why sometimes they compare the feet of Krishna to the lotus feet of Krishna, although it is incomparable. But yet for us to comprehend what it is, notionally the scriptures actually compare Krishna like or the properties of the sages like this to something what we know about, although it is not, it is incomparable. Does it answer it properly? Maharaj, do you want to add something? Maharaj? Yes, ma'am.
They look such sweet class. They look such a sweet class. I'd like to take you back to the beginning when you described before the Buddha. And just to get that clear, because I have a very little brain. So the fourth order, we went from Krishna to Mahavishnu to Brahma to the Prajapatis, to the sons of Brahma. And that's number four. Is that what you're saying, or am I mistaken?
Just to repeat the question of Mataji. Thank you, Mataji. It's actually Srila Prabhupada's glories and the Sri Vaishnava's blessings. The question is, we discussed about the canto, naming of the canto called as creation of the fourth order. So is it because the first canto was creation, and does Brahma become the fourth order? Is it the question that you asked about? How is it the fourth order? Yeah. How is it the creation of the fourth order? The creation of the fourth order, how I have understood, is it is talking about the material creation. So the first canto is creation. This creation, it's because Janma, yes, Krishna, it is Krishna who is the beginning of everything. That is why the first chapter, first canto has been named as creation. But the fourth order, how I have understood, is the primary creation of the Sarga is the creation by the Purushavataras, which is the Mahavishnu Garbhodakshana. That is the primary creation. The secondary creation is Brahmaji, and he creates Manu, who is the third. And the fourth is Swayambhu Manu and Uttanapada. So they are the fourth order. So they are the creation of the fourth order. Yeah. Further down, yes. Starting from the primary creation, who is the Purushavataras. Yes. Any more comments or questions? So I will end here. Thank you very much. Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki. Yes, please.
We were telling about the sense control from Burma perspective of Brahmachari. But if you see, Yoga also talks about household Brahmachari.
Yes.
So, it's not fair to have that Brahmachari is a pauper. That's nothing to do with bhakti, because I mean, Varnashram is not even the 64 angas of bhakti. So, can we elaborate on also Brahmachari or other Varnas? You know, how this is not even included in the Bhagavad Gita?
Just to repeat your question, I have spoken that Brahmachari is a spiritualist, sees that sense control is prime, and Brahmacharis do that. But your question was, why or how is it not included for Brahmacharis in the Grihastha Ashram or any other ashram for that sake? My small understanding, a little understanding of this is, Brahmacharyam is actually not the ashram, but it is a consciousness. Brahma Acharyam means, like for example, Brahman, Adhato Brahma Jigyasa. So one who is after the Param Brahman, Supreme Brahma, and one who is following that in his life, he is called Brahma Achariti Iti Brahmachari. So in the 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, it is mentioned that there are four Brahmacharis. Brahmachari who is in the Brahmachari Ashram,
the Grihastha Brahmachari, the Vanaprastha Brahmachari, and the Sannyasi Brahmachari. So Brahmachari is a state of consciousness that pervades all that, all ashrams actually. So in one sense, the sense control has, the regulation of the senses actually applies in the human form of life, no matter what ashram or what varna we are in. So it is imperative that if you are a Grihastha, if you are a Vanaprastha or a Sannyasi, the sense control has to be done and it has to be regulated. The senses have to be regulated. Having said that, I still stand my point, but people are elevated, those who actually give up their material duties and take up to this Krishna consciousness. Because the first offense that we actually chant, that we should not be blasphemous to someone who has actually given up his life for Krishna consciousness. There is a distinction between a person who has actually given up his life for Krishna consciousness completely and a person who is still in his, who is actually traveling on both roads. So they always are, in one sense, ahead of the game in terms of spiritual practice when compared to Grihasthas. Having said that, it doesn't discount that the Grihasthas are not advanced. We have great acharyas in the lineage who are actually Grihasthas, like His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada himself, or His Divine Grace Bhakti Vinod Thakur. But it is just in my perspective that it really behooves me that how someone can be in the top notch of the corporate circles and then give up everything and take up the Krishna consciousness full time. So this is just my perception. Does it satisfy you? Thank you. Hare Krishna. Yes, please.
You gave that song about sugar and sweetness and
yes.
We say sugar is sweet and salt is salty. Because all other factors are the same, Krishna and mind and experience are same, it is more sugar and salt. So that's why we say sugar is salt, sugar is sweet and salt is salt.
Yeah.
Because if there are all other factors being the same, we have to make a distinction.
Yes. So what's that?
So it's not that Krishna is sugar and Krishna is salt.
Yeah.
Yeah,
thank you for the correction. In fact, when I was saying that Krishna is sugar, I really meant that these are energies of Krishna. The fact that I am being able to distinguish that it is sugar and salt is because of the potency of Krishna being present there, and that he is enabling my senses to be able to taste that sense object. As Krishna says, Bhumirapo Nalo Vayu Kham Mano Buddhi Revacha. So earth, water, fire. Everything in this creation is a mix of earth, water and fire. Salt is a mixture of earth. Gandhavati prithvihi. And water has a taste of taste. So the perception or the tanmatra of taste of water and the perception of sweetness of sugar is a mixture of earth, water and fire. And these are separated energies of Krishna. Krishna is saying these are my separated energies. So they are energies of Krishna. It is not Krishna, but they are separate energies. Maya tatamidam sarvam jagada abhyakta murtina matsthani sarva bhutani nachaham teshva avasthika. Krishna is saying, I am there in everything, but you can't find me in everything, Arjuna. What it means is, I am there in everything as an impervading in everything as my energies. But me as Krishna is not there. So if you want me, you have to come to my dham. But if you want to experience my energies, I am there in everything. So from that sense, yes, Krishna is there as his taste. Rasoham apsakamte, I am the taste of water. And because when I water the plants, I get mango, I get apple, both have sugar. In fact, if you see the ingredients, if you buy mangoes and strawberries, the ingredients are sugar, 30%. But really, is it sugar? Is it really sugar? Because it is not. A mango tastes different to an apple. So what is that taste? That taste is Krishna. What segregates a mango from an apple? That is just not sugar, it is something different. That unique taste of that fruit is Krishna. That because Krishna's energies has been imbued into all of this creation, he is everywhere, he is Vishnu. So from that perspective, you are right that we distinguish, it's because Krishna is allowing us to distinguish between these two elements. Does that answer the point? Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Vrindra Srimad Bhagavatam Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. By God Premanand.